Donald on a Kitchen talks about food. Donald on a Kitchen talks recipes. Donald on a Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio.
The Donald on a Kitchen show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. More information can be found at www.themuckyduckpub.com or from Marcus at telephone number 232-8888.
Welcome to the Donna Lana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noptigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, the center of Iowa, the center of it all. We talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. Thank you for joining us today. So, Donna, it looks like an early winter.
Well, it doesn't really count, but it did snow.
Yeah. And we were discussing leaves kind of falling down, and it's time. It's frost is on the pumpkin. I think it's a little too frosty for me right now. I'm looking forward to a little sunshine.
I think we'll get it warm again next week.
Oh, I hope so. Good. Well, I hope all of you are getting ready for cold, you know, kind of tidy up the garden and drain those hoses and things like that. Okay. Today on the Donna Lana Kitchen, we're going to have some pumpkin thoughts, a little trick-or-treat advice. We're going to talk about saints, truffles, sorghum molasses, sugar cane, and what to do with your wood ashes. I mean, we'll cover quite a bit.
This is our Halloween show. So on Saturday this year, we're actually having a full moon on Halloween. On Saturday, of course, no one can have parties because of COVID, but, you know, we are really well set up, and you got to remember that Halloween is the time when the veils between the worlds are the thinnest, and all kinds of things can happen, and the spirits can slip back and forth. So that full moon is going to bring us, well, certainly a lot of energy.
It is. It'll be pretty, I'm sure it will. And I've noticed that many, many people, in lieu of probably doing those parties, the house decorations are getting, people didn't used to decorate outside for Halloween, except maybe for a few pumpkins, but there's lights up, and there's the fake cobwebs, and
there's a house over on 13th Street. They must have, I don't know, a dozen of those fake skeletons hanging, like they're climbing off the roof, and it's adorable.
It's great.
Yeah, it's on 13th, just east of Duff, if you're driving by. It's very, very humorous. They've got them sitting in lawn chairs, and it's
just fun to see what people. I saw a full, well, not a full size, but a UFO as a spaceship, and it was like shooting up in a big one, you know, like 4 or 5 feet across, all with lights, and there was this. Oh, it was fancy.
Moving parts.
Well, no, but there were like flames or fake lights coming out of the bottom of it, and things were
So I guess you can take your children on a drive-by tour to see all the decorations around town.
I think so. People can, we can, because Halloween is a community event, and even though we can't do much face-to-face, remember, be nice to your neighbors out there and think of folks across the way and give them a good wave and give them a good scare this time of year. I guess you put out there are a lot of lights and lots of Christmas or a lot of Halloween decorations. I've come across a house that had kind of a fake old snarly fence up around the whole house, and they must have had 50 pumpkins on. I hope they had their own pumpkin patch. Beautiful thing. Mm. Real pumpkins, not cars.
This is in Ames.
This is Ames, yeah.
Actually, yeah, I don't suppose Raymond Gardens is doing their pumpkin carving.
Oh, that's true.
But I don't know.
To carve all by yourself there.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, well, it's still Halloween, and we got to find ways to compensate. Things to do at home for yourself or your children or.
Yeah. Well, there are still pumpkins for Halloween. Cinderella. Remember Cinderella? She had a pumpkin connection there. There's Peter Pumpkin Eater. He was into pumpkins. And then Charles Schulz, the cartoonist. And Linus and the Great Pumpkin. That is a new story we tell ourselves. Linus.
Lana, it's not that new.
It isn't.
What year do you suppose they made that in?
Oh, probably when, I don't know, 40 years ago.
Yeah, right. It's new, folks. It's newer than Cinderella. I'll give you that, okay?
I was thinking of the old-fashioned, and Peter Pumpkin Eater, okay? Okay, I'm sure there's other newer pumpkin things, too. All right. Oh, here is some pumpkin news from the Dunalana Kitchen News Department. Dick-a-dick, dick-a-dick, dick-a-dick. That's our ticker tape. The winner of the giant pumpkin kind of people, they grow giant pumpkins and then they get together and weigh them and challenge each other each year. The winner of the Half Moon Bay Pumpkin Contest in California, this was the 47th annual, weighed 2,350 pounds.
Good heavens. I hope they didn't have to move it out of the field.
No. People bring them in. This guy grew it in Anoka, Minnesota, a Midwestern pumpkin. And, of course, they're fussing. It pretty much takes up the back of a whole pickup truck.
You mean he grew it in Minnesota and took it to California for the contest?
Yeah, it's a guy thing. It's a guy thing.
Okay.
I mean, we're talking pickup trucks and hoists and lifts and things. The winner, Travis Geiger of Anoka, Minnesota, fed and watered his little pumpkin 10 times a day, he says. Now, it's definitely a guy thing. It's a guy thing. And people from all over the United States bring this stuff in, and they fuss over it. And also the seeds out of this pumpkin for next year are a big hot item, and they're like worth money and all that kind of thing. Also, of course, there is prize money. And this year, $7 a pound, which means the prize was $16,450.
Well, I guess you could afford to drive it across country. Now, usually at the Iowa State Fair, they have big pumpkin contests. Of course, we didn't get to do that this year.
No. So, but there are people out there growing.
Still growing pumpkins.
Now, this 2,350-pound pumpkin is not the biggest pumpkin that has been in this California contest. There was one in 2018 that was 2,500 pounds, That was the kind of the USA record. And, of course, Europe did us better. There was a pumpkin grown in Belgium in 2016 for the European pumpkin contest. They do that over there, too. From a grower from Belgium, and his was 2,600 pounds. So things just keep getting bigger and bigger. And that's the news of the giant pumpkin contest this year. 47th annual. Who'd have thought? But that must be, it must be an absolute heartbreak if they happen to drop those things. They're putting them on the, oh, how awful. How awful. Oh, dear. Well, thinking about this time of year and harvest and Halloween, we forget Halloween really does have a church connection in Hallow's Eve, the day before.
It's a very, very ancient holiday.
Day before All Souls, All Saints Day. And I ran across the thing about saints. I mean, the segue from pumpkin to saints, but it all sorts of fits in here. From a book by Peter Mayle, he wrote A Year in Provence about food and living in southern France. This is from his book, Provence A to Z. And he writes about saints in Provence, France. He is a transplanted English person that moved to southern France, and I like reading him, but he's quite a curmudgeon when it comes to things. Okay. And so here's what he says about some patron saints in his area, and there's a food connection here. He says there's patron saints for everything in his neighborhood. Businessmen have Saint Expedie watching them, and he also watches for some explicable reason over driving students. There's toothache sufferers have Saint Laurent, and And in his area, there's also St. Jean, who's been most popular because of his links to agriculture. Huh? There's St. Vincent, who is the patron saint of vintners of wine. Very good. We need that. Gardeners. St. Roche, patron saint of gardeners. And they take all that stuff quite seriously over there. You have your saint, you might as well address them every now and then. And this is what Peter Mayle says about this next saint, St. Antoine. Of all the saints in my neighborhood, it's a patron saint of truffles that I enjoy the most. St. Antoine is officially remembered each January in the church at Recherche during the Fête de la Truffe, the Feast of the Truffles. And he's one of the few patron saints who has to have his own signature tune, a chant dedicated specifically to him, is sung as part of the church service. It translates to, "Good Saint Antoine, give us truffles in abundance so that their perfume and good taste make us love Provence." And nobody could argue with sentiments like these, least of all members of the congregation whose custom it is to sit down after church and tuck into a truffle lunch.
We're getting into truffle season. Now, we don't get much truffle traffic here in Iowa, but there are things you can buy. Truffle oil, which is a little expensive usually for the good stuff. And if you're going to buy some, I would encourage you, it usually comes in fairly small bottles, but once it's open, it will lose its flavor rather rapidly. So if you're going to invest in some truffle oil, plan some sort of dish or dinner or something where within at least, 24, 48 hours, you actually use the whole bottle.
Yeah, a very good friend brought me some truffle oil, tiny little bottle, and I'm way too conservative. I did not use it right away, and then I just touched a little bit here and there. It does not last.
No. You think it's so precious, I won't use much, but in this case, it's the opposite. Just use it all up. It's really good. Truffle salt also you can get is. It will carry a flavor for a little while too. Those are things you can usually order online from a gourmet store. Or the other thing I like that we can find, even in the Hy-Vee sometimes, we'll have a truffle cheese.
Oh, that sounds
so
good.
It's usually a very mild kind of, I don't even know what kind they put it in. The cheese has no flavor. It's the truffle that you want, right? So I like, my favorite for truffles really is scrambled eggs with a little truffle cheese. Because you don't want to use truffles with anything that's heavily seasoned, because the flavor is, it's the aroma, as they would say, is really, really delicate. Of course, it's good. It's, the most famous thing for people to do is they boil a plate of good pasta, put a little butter on it, and then shave truffles over it.
Oh.
Is, if you have the real truffle.
So are truffles like shaved, like they dry them and shave them? Or
they're usually little tiny knobs, at the most 2 inches across, sometimes smaller. And you literally shave them like you would shaving cheese or chocolate, very thin slices, because it doesn't take much. So, if you're using truffle oil, it's really good on just plain buttered pasta or something with a very light vegetable, maybe, or that's why I tend to use eggs. It also can be, I've done things like cook a flank steak that I grilled and then poured a little truffle oil on top. It makes it, it's that extra umami kind of thing. So truffles, I think the most accessible though is the truffle cheese, and it will keep, at least the lifetime of a cheese in the refrigerator.
Okay, now that surprises me. Now, why would the truffles be so ephemeral elsewhere? And then once they're in cheese, it must be something about the cheese that holds the taste or something.
It must be the fats in it or something.
Fats, right?
I don't really know.
And
usually we only have truffle cheeses in this time of year, usually kind of through Christmas season. So I haven't, since I'm not shopping obsessively these days because of the you know, because COVID, I try to limit my grocery store trips. So I have not browsed the cheesecakes, but I have in the past gotten it either at Wheatsfield or Hy-Vee. I think those are the two places that I have found truffle cheeses. But it does give you a nice truffle experience, which is, you know, it's required sometime during the fall. You'll have to have a truffle experience.
Oh, see, that's what's been lacking in my life.
The truffle experience?
Yeah, I never knew you could have cheese. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, it's the easiest one to manage.
The truffles go,
and usually the most reasonably priced.
Oh, very good. Yeah. Yes, because we're talking a pricey item here. Evidently, truffles are quite the thing, and it must be kind of like trout fishermen. Yeah, you never tell where you get your trout. You never tell where you get.
Yeah,
you never tell.
And there's white truffles and brown truffles, and they're graded. No, white and black, I believe, and they're graded. You know, I it can get very fancy.
Oh my!
But not here in Iowa, so.
But no, don't worry, folks. Here in Iowa, we have mushrooms, and mushrooms, not just the morels in the spring. There are summer and fall mushrooms there. Well, before this last, actually, there might still be some out there because the snow wasn't that bad. There are still oyster mushrooms out there, and there are still chicken of the woods mushrooms out there. Matter of fact, I just put one in a big soup pot, the chicken of the woods mushroom in a big soup pot recently, and even though, okay, this thing was not really what would you consider edible because it was kind of on the dry side, letting it kind of burble away with some other things was really good. And it never really...
So you used it for stock, basically.
I used it for stock.
That's a good idea. Stock,
and yes, it was beyond being edible because even boiling it for a while, it made the stock taste really good. But it wasn't really edible, so you take that out and go on from there. So we have a lot of good taste. No truffles in Iowa, but well, that's all right.
Yeah, we have a lot of other truffles around here.
We have all kinds of truffles. Yes, yeah. We do. Good. Oh, back to saints. Just before we move on to another thing here, Peter Mayle's book also mentions there is a saint in France, a saint of television. Saint Clare of Assisi was officially approved by received papal approval in 1958, a saint of television. Why there would be one?
Well, the Vatican, it has to stay current. You know?
Oh, okay. And they're working on Saint Isidore of Seville as a patron saint of the internet. But
That's a big job. Somebody's got to do it.
And we could probably use her help a lot. I certainly can use her help a lot of times. But that's kind of work in progress here.
Well, so it's hard to know what to do this year for the kiddies for Halloween. We were talking about past Halloweens. And, you know, I'm sort of, again, going to the store and buying huge bags of candies. I know the children love it. You know, but there was a dentist in town a few years ago. I saw he put a big sign out that if you brought your candy in, he would buy it back from you.
Oh, well, good idea.
Yeah.
Well, turn it into hard, cold cash. I think, I don't know. What are we teaching our children with that? I don't know.
Well, I think he was just thinking, worrying about their teeth. So, what else could he do? One of my favorite Halloween giveaways came one year. Helen Gunderson, who gardens extensively and has the Burnett Urban Farm. So she's out on Burnett, not too far, but in a neighborhood where you get a lot of walk by on Halloween. She planted a side garden and every child that came got to go out and dig up their own carrot.
That's nice.
I thought that was a great idea.
And it's already Halloween orange.
Yeah, it was like a teaching moment for the children. You know, look, the carrots come out. They grow in the ground.
Good.
Come and get your own.
Good. Yeah. One thing I have run across as a suggestion, well, two things I have run across as a suggestion to give away for Halloween are seeds, particularly pumpkin seeds for next year. Not a bad thing to give away. And now get this one. The kids will love this. Maybe the parents not so much. Give out little paper cups of compost with red wiggler worms in them. That's a nice Halloween. Trick or treat, everybody. Well,
you got to make sure the children don't dump it in the bag with their candy.
That's true. Well, maybe a little bit of instruction there. But red wigglers, that's a good thing. There we go. All right. This is KHOI, and this is the Donalana Kitchen Tasty Radio for the Radio for the Heart of Iowa. For this next little section here, I want to talk about a fall sort of subject. We harvest things, and we tend to consume a lot of sweets during the holidays, starting now, but let's be honest, all the way through the holidays here, coming up, we got Thanksgiving.
Yep, it's the eating season.
Yeah, it's the eating season. And sweets. We didn't always have bags of sugar that we got from the grocery store. And if we did, they were pretty precious. People have been making sugar out of a lot of different things. And we'll be talking about, molasses and sorghum and all that kind of thing. I ran across an old tune. And believe it or not, it was on an old cassette that I had and some musicians that I used to know. And on KHOI, there's a show called Bob's 8-Track Garage Sale, and he plays 8-Track tapes. This is from a cassette, believe it or not. This is a golden oldie, and this song is called The Old Cane Press, and it talks about fall and the cane press. So let's listen to The Old Cane Press.
Well, the time of the year that I like the best is the time when the mule walks round the press. Girls put on their gingham dress, by and by. Well, the leaves are red and the ground is cold, sap's gonna rise, so I've been told that we don't care if the frosts are coming, by and by. Well, down the road come an old tar heel, and on his back a sack of meal, and at his heel an old hound dog, by and by. He'll trade the meal and the hound dog too for a kiss from the pretty girl dressed in blue, prettiest girl I've ever seen, by and by. Well, the time of the year that I like the best is the time when the mule walks round the press. Girls put on their gingham dress, by and by. Well, the leaves are red and the ground is cold, sap's gonna rise, so I've been told that we don't care if the frosts are coming, by and by. Well, the folks are coming from miles around, the wagon tracks tearing up the ground. They come with the cane and they come for the spark, by and by. Then we'll build up a fire by the old iron pot. We'll cook up the cane till it's boiling hot. Then in the dark we'll steal a kiss, by and by. Well, the time of the year that I like the best is the time when the mule walks round the press. Girls put on their gingham dress, by and by. The leaves are red and the ground is cold, sap's gonna rise, so I've been told that we don't care if the frosts are coming, by and by. Well, they come from here and they come from there, folks coming round from most everywhere, but the old mule Joe keeps it going round, by and by. Well, they come for to dance and they come for to sing, they come to make the rafters ring, they come with the cane and they come for the sorghum, by and by. Well, the time of the year that I like the best is the time when the mule walks round the press. Girls put on their gingham dress, by and by,
by and by.
Well, the leaves are red and the ground is cold, sap's gonna rise, so I've been told that we don't care if the frosts are coming, by and by. Well, the time of the year that I like the best is the time when the mule walks round the press. Girls put on their gingham dress. By and by, by and by. Well, the leaves are red and the ground is cold. Sap's gonna rise, so I've been told that we don't care if the frosts are coming. By and by, by and by.
Are back. That was a tune called The Old Cane Press, and that is a golden oldie. It was by a Central Iowa band that existed back in the 80s, believe, and we're talking 1980s, folks, here. The band is Hybrid Grass. It was released on a limited edition cassette tape called First Cutting. The musicians, Fred Williams on guitar, Dave Belagante on fiddle, Ted Capes on bass and lead vocal on this tune, and Merle Hall on the 5-string banjo. Thank you to Merle Hall for unearthing this tune and passing it along. Yes, and someplace I have got a dusty tape with that on. Somehow the mule walking around the press is something that stuck in my head.
So this is an Ames band.
Well, Central Iowa. Oh, okay. I mean... Merle is from Granger, the big metropolis of Granger, but, you know, kind of the Central Iowa musicians. And thanks to Hybrid Grass for providing us with that good tune.
So it was about a sorghum mill.
That was a sorghum mill, yes. You know, the end of the year, growing the sorghum is actually related to corn, but it's more grass-like.
It's okay. It comes from Africa. It was brought over.
And corn is a grain too, is a grass too, but this has the big seed heads, but the stalks like sugar cane. Huh?
Well, there apparently are varietals, of course, and there are some that are called sugar sorghum or sweet sorghum, mm-hmm. I believe it is. And those, the stalks you press, kind of like you press a sugar cane, mm-hmm. and you get a juice out of it, and then you boil it down. Now, sorghum, still occasionally see it around Iowa, and it has a flavor. It's kind of like a light molasses with a slight sour flavor, and you can substitute in recipes molasses for, well, not blackstrap molasses, but regular molasses. You can substitute equal portions with sorghum, and you know, this is you think of molasses, and of course it's the season of the year for gingerbread cakes, gingerbread cookies, molasses cookies.
Now, molasses comes from what we normally call sugar cane?
Molasses is a byproduct of sugar making. So both sugar cane and sorghum stalks they're run through a press, and then the juice comes out, and then they're further processed by boiling and reducing. Mm-hmm. With sugar, somehow it crystallizes or something, and they pull the crystals off, and they keep boiling and you keep getting the molasses. And the longer it's boiled, the deeper, like the blackstrap molasses, which has a pretty intense flavor, is in the final boil. Whereas the kind of, what's it called? Grandma's molasses. Is that the brand name or some? Brer Rabbit? No, or is that the blackstrap? I forget. You can buy the molasses at the grocery store, and they can be substituted. But sorghum was used a lot. It's used a lot in Southern cooking because during the Civil War, there was a blockade on the Southern ports, so they couldn't get the cane sugar and stuff from like the islands where it was coming from. So the Southerners, of course, resorted to making their own with sorghum. Mm-hmm. So you do like biscuits with sorghum dribbled on them is a common thing still. I mean, it's not that common. It's still kind of an old-fashioned thing, but it's a big part of Southern cooking is sorghum. But we have it around here, too. Mm-hmm. It grows grows well in hot and dry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, at least I grow sorghum. I grow sorghum on my farm, but I grow the decorative, and I grow it for the decorative seed heads, and also the chickens like those seed heads. So there are different kinds of sorghum.
Yes. Yeah, it's grown mostly for animal feed, but that's not the sweet sorghum. Yeah. And it's also You can buy sorghum flour. I've never cooked with it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I actually...
Probably with the seed, from the seeds on top?
Maybe. They just grind it. I don't know. Why not? I mean, I saw some in Minnesota when I was there last week.
Huh.
I didn't buy it because I thought, well, I don't know what I'd do with it.
That's just something else.
But sorghum.
Good.
Sorghum.
Well, talking about gatherings and Halloween and things that kids can do. Donna, you want to share a really interesting
thing? Oh, yeah. Speaking of molasses, it reminded me of something I did a long time ago. I had some young friends who, they were like in grade school, right? So they were reading Little House in the Prairie, and they all had to do book reports. So I suggested this project for Avery. So we got the Little House Cookbook, which is Frontier Foods from Laura Ingalls Wilder's Classic Stories. And it's quite actually an interesting book because it gives, you know, it's historical and it really, so for children, it's a way of making pioneer life a reality. So Avery and I decided we would try, she had to do a class presentation, right? So we decided we would make pulled molasses taffy. And the recipe is in the book. It's called Pulled Candy. And there's a long quote from one of the books called Farmer Boy about making the candy. And then I loved doing this with Avery because my mother used to do this with the Girl Scout troops and stuff. I have vivid remembers. So this might be a good thing if you have children at home and you cannot, you know, you're not taking them out in public for trick-or-treating, you could still do a candy pull at home. It's a good time of year for it. You don't want to do it when it's hot out or when there's too much humidity. So about now is, it's probably, I would say, because it involves handling something hot. So you don't want to do it with, you know, really young children, but, you know, a responsible 7-year-old through early, you know, I mean, teenagers are never interested in things like this usually, but, you know, it's a good, fun middle school years. It's quite simple. It's basically I'm going to actually read from the Little House Cookbook. So this is from Little House in the Prairie. Let's see, where do we want to start? Basically, you you have to butter a plate because, you know, it's sticky. So you butter some plates and you have plenty of butter for your fingers. You have to butter your fingers. And then you cook the brown sugar. Here it says 1 cup and 2 cups of light molasses and a tablespoon of vinegar. So you butter the plates generously, and then you combine the brown sugar, the molasses, and the vinegar with a 1/2 cup of water, and you stir over high heat. And you need a fairly large pan because it can splatter and burn, so you have to be careful. Obviously, you know, some adult supervision is helpful. You stir it over high heat until it starts to boil. You lower the heat to medium, and then you add what they call a walnut-sized piece of butter, and you continue to cook, stirring frequently to prevent sticking. After 10 minutes, now this is fun for the children, you use the drop test. After 10 minutes, make the first test by dripping syrup from the spoon into a glass of cold water. The drops may dissolve and make the water cloudy, or they may form soft balls. Repeat the drip test every few minutes using clean water each time. The candy is ready to remove from the heat when a sample forms a hard ball in the water. Now, if you're using a candy thermometer, which they would not have used in Little House on the Prairie, that's from 250 to 260 degrees. Okay, then it says, with one person holding the pot and the other one scraping out the contents, pour the candy on the greased platters. Let the candy cool about 5 minutes. Grease your hands well with the butter and begin to work it by pulling the cooled edges towards the middle. When the lump is cool enough to handle, pick it up and pull it with the fingers to the length of about 1 foot. Press the ends together and hold with one hand while folding the center. So what you're doing is you're pulling it, stretching it out, and then folding it back on itself. So when I did it as a child, you would pull between two people. Now, you don't pull too far, like 18, it says a foot here, but 18 inches maximum. But it's kind of fun because you're pulling it and flipping it back and forth.
How many pulls? Lots?
Well, let's see. How much does it say? When it is cool and fairly stiff, twist it into a long rope and make a place on a greased surface. It can be coiled on the platter. You mark it with a knife, or you can use a scissors too, for like 1-inch pieces, basically. You put an indentation so that when it cools completely, you can shatter it right where the mark is. And it's break up the candy when it's completely cool. And then Mama used to take, you have to wrap it because, of course, it gets sticky and will stick back together and make a big mess. So she used to take wax paper and cut it into little, like, 2.5-inch squares. So then afterwards, you have to wrap it all up. Now, the fun thing about this is, of course, you don't have to make it with molasses. Like, you can look up The Joy of Cooking and make more contemporary flavors, I'll say. Because when Avery and I cooked it, all of her kids in the Malibu grade school.
This is in California.
Yeah, right. They were not used to the flavor of molasses. So even though she took the candy in, and, you know, children usually love candy, well, the molasses flavor was not a hit.
Oh.
So, but if you lived during the time of Little House on the Prairie, when you were not used to thousands of flavors of candy, molasses taffy was a big treat. But it is a fun thing to do. If your children are not, if their palate is not educated towards molasses, just do a vanilla flavor with sugar and caro syrup or whatever. You can get a recipe on the internet, because the fun part is, you know, handling the hot toffee and the, oh, be careful, and then pulling together. It's a nice project to do for a Halloween.
Oh, good. And the idea of pulling and folding and stretching.
Yeah. It goes on for a little while, like, 5 minutes or something.
And the idea is you're like getting air bubbles in it, or you're airing it out.
I think it somehow makes it it stays glossy, and it gets more opaque as it goes along.
Otherwise, you probably end up with just kind of a hard sugar lump.
Yeah, right. The pulling is part of the candy making. It's not just an activity. It's actually part of the process to get the taffy. You have to aerate it somehow.
Aerate the taffy.
Yeah.
Well, good. So that is a taffy pull. A taffy, good idea.
You don't have to just do it with children. Actually, when we were talking about writing the show, it made us, Joe and Lana and I decided, maybe we should just pull some taffy sometime. It's fun.
It sounds like a good winter thing.
It's a good party trick, guys.
Yeah, good idea.
Yeah.
And also, there's a lot of other, like you said, there's other flavors you could add. You add the flavors just before you dump it out, or you put it on the...
Well, according to The Joy of Cooking, because, of course, it happened so many years ago, I don't really remember what my mother did. But I suppose you could just pour some vanilla on, or we could, like, I keep in my fridge orange citrus oil or lime citrus oil. And that, I think if you just sprinkle it on as you pull it, read The Joy of Cooking. It tells different ways you can flavor, like even chocolate. I think it said, if you shave the chocolate onto the buttered plate, then when you pour, who knows? I've never done it. I'm not here to tell you how to do it, but I think the flavoring is optional. You can do whatever you want.
And that is a Halloween sort of thing to do with sorghum or molasses, or heaven forbid, even caro corn syrup, because yes, The Joy of Cooking does have some. Joy of Cooking also mentions saltwater taffy, mm-hmm. which it seems a kind of a fancy name. And yes, salt is added to it. So that helps.
But it's a make your own homemade candy would be a wonderful Halloween project.
Why not? That's good. I like that. I like that a lot. I wonder how much it makes. Tons and tons, probably.
Oh,
two cups of stuff.
Well, I remember when we did it with Avery, it was enough for the whole classroom. Uh-huh. So, probably 30 pieces. I mean, enough for the child or the adult to feel like they have plenty of candy.
Good. So plenty of candy. And that's what you can do with
right. The candy all doesn't always come just from the grocery store, right?
No, it doesn't. One can make one's own. And hearken back, that sugar, that sweet, comes from cane of some sort. And it's an agricultural product. Remember that. Somehow it always goes back to the earth. Very
something
good.
That grows. Ha!
We mentioned that this is KHOI Community Radio, and you're listening to the Don Juana Kitchen. If you want to get more information about this fine radio station, about this fine show, go to www.khoifm.org. Find out about lots of shows. This radio station is on the air 24/7, doing all kinds of good things for the community and for all of Central Iowa. And you can find out more about the Don Juana Kitchen by going to the talk section and pull that down and find the Don Juana Kitchen. There's past shows, there's recipes. You can find out more than you ever wanted to know about the Don Juana Kitchen. Yes, you can. Well, this time of year, The Fire in the Wood Stove, a good book and a cat on my lap suits me just fine. A wood stove is a big part of how I heat my house, and Donna has a wood stove too. When you heat with wood, besides being able to snuggle up to it, it's work. I mean, you have to deal with the wood and know what you're doing and clean out the stove and everything. You end up with wood ash. So what do you do with
it? It's messy.
Wood ash. Yes, wood ash. So I ran across a little article here that talks about great uses for wood ash. Wood ash is primarily made up of calcium, potassium, phosphorus, and magnesium, but has also other trace elements too. And because it's a combustion of organic material, it's really good as a amendment to your garden to help with
or your lawn
or your lawn. It's been used by gardeners and farmers for a long time. It also has household uses, but here are some of the things you want to keep in mind. Use only ashes from wood that is chemical free. Don't use ash that comes from pressure treated wood or painted wood. Remember that. You get the best results with ash obtained from hardwoods like oak and maple. Ash from those trees has 5 times as much nutrients per cord as softwoods. Huh? Remember that? Actually, hardwoods burn really nicely in the wood stove too. Wood ash is highly alkaline, so be careful. Wear gloves. Don't get it in your eyes. And think of it as bleach. You don't want to deal with all that alkaline in your hands. Never combine wood ashes with nitrogen fertilizers. It'll produce ammonia gas. Be careful. And wood ash contains salt, so use it sparingly. It's good stuff for the garden, but don't put it on all in one place.
So you just sprinkle it around. You don't want to just like keep dumping it.
Don't dump it. But if you have a garden space, sprinkle. I do that kind of all winter and let it kind of melt through the snow. Here's some indoor things for your household use. You can make an ash tea for your plants, huh? You can let it, fill it with water and let it steep. And you kind of brew that tea in a bucket there, and pour about a cup around your potassium deficient plants, huh?
Well, how would you know which ones are potassium deficient?
I suppose they are not so good. We'll see. You can make soap out of them. Soap, yeah. Ashes are a big thing that you need. The lye in there helps make soap. And if you are so inclined, you can make toothpaste out of it, but we'll just, I don't think so. You can add stuff. Yeah, it does get rid of unpleasant odors, just like baking soda. Think kitty litter box, huh? Very pretty good.
Well, not too much.
No, not too much.
Burning kitty paws.
Put it underneath. You can polish silver, metal, and glass. It's mildly
really?
Abrasive. Huh? And use rubber gloves, huh? Okay. It makes good things shine. And outdoor wood ash use. Here's some things. You can neutralize acidic soil. And unless you're growing acidic plants like blueberries, peppers, and azaleas, you want to keep your garden soil.
That's right. Don't put it on your hydrangeas.
Put it on your hydrangeas. You might want to test your soil and get the acidity and alkaline levels good. You do want to use it on calcium-loving plants. Oh, here it is. You could also use crushed eggshells. But wood ash is good. It is good for things like apple trees, carrots, tomatoes, potatoes, cauliflower, broccoli, lettuce, cabbage, and Brussels sprouts. There you go.
I wonder if it'd work on my peach tree. Well, if you have soil that's been under pine trees, that would be too acidic. So that might be a good, I don't know what it would do to the pine tree, but the things under it.
Yeah, I mean, if you're trying to grow something and you think it's a little.
I wonder if it would help the grass grow under the pine tree.
And then you just have to mow it, Donna.
Oh,
okay. Add it to your compost moderately. Again, don't dump it all in, but I do that with my compost all winter. As I put compost out, dust, some ash on top of it. I don't know why it seems a good thing to do, but now since I've read this article, I know not to dump it all in a bunch. It also, during the garden season, deters slugs and snails. It's good for your lawn. And get this, as a dust bath for backyard chickens, they keep parasites away like lice and mites. Mix ash with sand for a dust bath, and your chickens will love to roll in that stuff. Now, here's something that Donna and I have, we have played around with this, and we have a word of warning. This article says, use it to melt ice and snow. Good idea. Wood ash is natural and safe alternative. It has good traction. It can de-ice, help melt the snow. Unlike rock salt, wood ash won't corrode surfaces or harm your pet paws. However, Donna, you take away.
All right. So one winter about 3 years ago, I thought, this will make my front porch not so slippery in the sidewalk. And so I was sprinkling the wood ashes in the front porch and out the sidewalk, down the back and in the front. And don't do that.
Don't do that.
No, because what happens is as it melts, then everybody tracks in this mucky, wet, and the ashes all over the floor. So maybe I'll put it in my driveway this year because it'll be okay for the car. But don't put it near the house because it'll get tracked back in and you will not be happy.
Yes. Word of warning from the Donna Lana Kitchen. I've done that too.
Yeah,
what a good idea.
Just sprinkle the snow. Not on the back porch or the front porch.
However, if there is a slippery spot, as there often will be on my lane that goes out to the main road, I do take it out there by the 5-gallon bucket and put it under car tire. As a matter of fact, I had good luck getting the mailman who was stuck in our driveway out last year. As a matter of this, I think it wasn't our usual mailman. I think he was a young man. I don't think he knew about driving on snow because he wasn't doing too well. But a little application of wood ash underneath his tires and along the track that he had to get out of our driveway onto the road, it helped. So I was able to be a hero there. That was good.
Great. So wood ashes.
Oh, here's one last thing. Remove oil stains in garage and driveway. Because wood ash is a desiccant. It is perfect for cleaning up grease spills, like on stone, cement, and asphalt. So it can soak up things. So wood ashes, you don't need to just kind of dump them in a pile. Think of using them judiciously around where you need a little bit of fertilizer, a little bit of alkaline additions to things. And
I have a little, like, I do a pattern on my lawn and I start at one end and then, you know, every time I empty the wood stove, I go to the next spot so that by the time the winter is finished, it's been spread almost everywhere except under the hydrangeas.
And on your steps. Don't put it.
Not on the front steps or the back steps.
I think you do that once you realize it's a mistake. So you can avoid doing that. But if you have wood ashes, don't just throw them away. It's a resource. And yes, it can go back into the ground and help things along.
Do you actually take it out for your chickens?
Yeah. I put it in the compost. I make a little pile in the corner of the chicken house that they like to fluff around in. And yes, I do take it out and run up and down my garden beds, and I will be more careful about being, taking a grain scoop out there and squishing it around and kind of take note of which way the wind is blowing when you do that.
Yes, another thing.
Another tip from the Donalana Kitchen. And it's just fine. So waste not, want not. And I hope all of you that do have a wood stove have got wood cut and piled and dry for this year. You can't just go out and whack down a tree this time of year because it has to dry. So think of doing trees for next year.
We're burning a lot of ash trees this year, yes, because we've been cutting them down for a few years. Goodness. So we're having ash from the ashes.
We are. Yes, it is. Well, I want to mention, if you have comments about this show, if you have a recipe you would like to share, if you would like to comment on wood ashes or anything, chickens in general, or anything on your farm, garden, in your kitchen, we'd like to hear from you. You can contact me by email, Lana@onioncreekfarm@gmail.com. What's on your plate? We would like to hear from you. Yes, we would. That would be fantastic. Also, I want to mention that on our Donalana Kitchen website, there are recipes. And we make mistakes, so you don't have to. So you can find out recipes there. There's a recipe there, which is a good Halloween thing. I like making caramel corn and caramel corn with maple syrup. Now, I don't use the high quality maple syrup, but that's another sweetener. We talked about cane sweeteners today, but there's also maple sweeteners and corn sweeteners. And there's a nice recipe for oven candied caramel corn on that website.
Another good Halloween treat.
I've never been one for making popcorn balls. It seems kind of icky to squish all that stuff together, but popcorn. In Little House in the Prairie book, there was a thing about putting popcorn in milk and using it as a breakfast cereal. Well, it's possible. Well, we're talking Little House on the Prairie here, and you could do that. I mean, just think, we eat probably a lot less nutritious stuff like that for breakfast cereal, puffed this and that.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, the idea of popcorn. And you put lots of different seasonings on popcorn, which is a fine thing to have.
I do a lot of savory seasonings on the popcorn, which I like just adding curry and garlic to the butter that you pour on the popcorn.
Curry popcorn is really, really, that's very nice.
Well, garlic butter on anything is really nice.
Good. Well, thank you for joining us today. We talked about trick-or-treat things today. We talked about truffles. We talked about molasses and sorghum and some trick-or-treat ideas and how to make taffy, just in case you'd like to do that. We also talked about great uses for wood ash. Yes, we did. So, hey, remember to vote this time of year. Wear your mask. It's not just for trick-or-treat this year. Be patient. Be kind. Wash your hands. Yes. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. We come to you Tuesdays at noon. We come to you live. Yes, we come to you live. And we're repeated Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. But you can find us anytime at khoyfm.org. You can find past shows there and find out more about this station. We had music today from Hybrid Grass. Thanks to Merle Paul for sending that tune along. Support this fine radio station. We try to bring you a little sanity in these scary times. Happy Halloween. My name is Lana Noctical.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.
An old tar heel and on his back a sack of meal. And at his heel an old hound dog. By and by, by and by. He'll trade the meal and the hound dog too for a kiss from the pretty girl dressed in blue, prettiest girl I've ever seen by and by. Well, the time of the year that I like the best is the time when the mule walks round the press. Girls put on their gingham dress by and by, by and by. Well, the leaves are red and the ground is cold, sap's gonna rise, so I've been told that we don't care if the frosts are coming by and by. Well, the folks are coming from miles around, the wagon tracks tearing up the ground. They come with the cane and they come for the spark by and by, by and by. Then we'll build up a fire by the old iron pot. We'll cook up the cane till it's boiling hot. Then in the dark we'll steal a kiss by and by. Well, the time of the year that I like the best is the time when the mule walks round the press. Girls put on their gingham dress by and by, by and by. The leaves are red and the ground is cold, sap's gonna rise, so I've been told that we don't care if the frosts are coming by and by. Well, they come from here and they come from there, folks coming round from most everywhere, but the old mule Joe keeps it going round, by and by, by and by. Well, they come for to dance and they come for to sing, they come to make the rafters ring, they come with the cane and they come for the sorghum, by and by. Well, the time of the year that I like the best is the time when the mule walks round the press, girls put on their gingham dress, by and by, by and by.
By and by, by and by.
Well, the leaves are red and the ground is cold, sap's gonna rise, so I've been told that we don't care if the frosts are coming, by and by.